Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, welcome along to Writer's Routine. This week we're talking to Sam Lloyd. He's just released his debut thriller. It's called The Memory Wood. It's all about Alyssa, who is abducted and hidden in the woods, and all about the boy Elijah, who finds her but won't let her escape. Now, we talk about how he had the idea for the story while he was bored for a whole day at school with his son. Also, we learn how the story actually forced him to switch genre. And we talk about why sometimes he thinks about mixing it all up and how that might actually help with his writing.
I remember once when I thought to myself, you know, maybe I need to get a new, completely new perspective. And I took myself off to another part of the house, and I think I might have even sat under my son's desk for 5 minutes with my laptop tucked away. And after about 5 minutes, I thought to myself, you're in your early 40s, you're sitting under your son's desk. Come on, get a grip. Go back downstairs and start writing again, which is what I did.
So stick around, more from Sam Lloyd on the way in this week's Writer's Routine. Yes. My name is Dan Simpson. Welcome along. This is Writer's Routine, the show that takes you inside the working day of some of the most successful authors around to try and steal some of their scheduling secrets. Now, if you're stuck at home just like me right now, and if you finally started thinking about how you're actually going to get that book done, how at last it's going to get out of you onto the page, well, I've got something that can really help you out with it. I've managed to sort you a discount for the fantastic writing software Scrivener, which comes as a nice salve in these dark and desperate times. Now, if you've listened to the show for a while, you'll have heard all about it. Quite a few of the authors that we do talk to rave on, and they would carry on to rave on about it until I actually had to ask them about the book that they're there to sell. It's a brilliant writing tool. It lets you plan, it lets you plot, it lets you move and research the way that you tell your stories. It's got a virtual pin board on there with colour charts and with tags so that you can keep track of characters and stories. Now, Scrivener, it was created by writers for writers. The lead developer of it, he had the idea for the app because he couldn't find the right software to help him with his own novel writing. It takes the software tools that are used by writers everywhere and it combines them into a single package. Now, it won't tell you how to write, but it'll give you everything that you need to help start writing and then keep writing. Now, you might not actually think when you've heard us talk about Scrivener before that you really need help in getting a place to write your story. But the joy, I think, of Scrivener is that it helps you out in so many different ways that you never realised you needed assistance while you are telling your stories. And now you've got a little bit of time to try it out. They've just released Scrivener 3. You can get it for under 50 quid. And with us, you can save 20%. Just use the code ROUTINE when you check out over at literatureandlatte.com. That's ROUTINE, R-O-U-T-I-N-E. Saves you 20% on Scrivener. It helps you out. And it helps us out at the show as well, because they're supporting the show for the rest of April. It's a brilliant way to get started with it. You get 20% off. Just use the code ROUTINE, R-O-U-T-I-N-E, when you check out. You save that on Scrivener, and you can get it over at literatureandlatte.com. Now, this week, our guest on the show is Sam Lloyd. He's written fantasy and sci-fi before, but his first thriller is The Memory Wood. It's all about Alyssa that gets snatched at a school chess tournament. She gets hidden away. And the boy Elijah, who finds her, but won't tell anyone that she's there. Now, really, that's all you get about the plot. It's twisting, it's turning, but Sam, you know, he's the author, it's his right, he doesn't want to give any more away. It was all I could do to get that for you, okay? All about Alyssa and Elijah, but we do unpack that in the chat. He is terrifically open about his writing day. He explains why he wants to improve his productivity and about how he's doing that, how he's managing to retrain the part of the brain that focuses. Also, you can hear why the story started as a mashup of two ideas and why the boy Elijah stayed with him for quite a long time before he finally found the outlet, the story, to get his tale down. Also, I've got some news about book releases that you might have missed over the last few weeks on the way in a sec. First, though, let's get into it with Sam Lloyd, starting, as always, with what he sees around him in the place where he sits down to write.
I tend to write in my living room every day, and the first thing I do is in the morning is drop my kids off at school, and I come back and it's peaceful in the house and quiet, apart from my dog. And I sit at the dining table usually, which looks out onto the garden.
So you're at the dining table in your living room. Why there? I mean, a living room is a space that's taken over by everyone in your family. You know, you've got boys. Have you got anything that makes it yours there whilst you write, or is it still slightly chaos?
No, it's chaos. And we've got a small little house, and we've got three boys in it as well. So my first job usually is to clear away all the spilt milk and Rice Krispies from the table in the morning and try and find myself. So no, I don't have my own space at all. I tend to sort of find a space for myself during the day, and then it's chaos again at about 6 o'clock when everyone comes home.
Talk to me about what's around it. I know, as I said, it's a family place, so it's not your space at all. Have you got anything around you that is inspirational, that does help you out with your writing?
Just the garden, really. I mean, the dining table's in a little conservatory, so surrounded by glass, and I look out onto a little garden, and there's usually cats coming in from the next door neighbours and squirrels, and that's about it.
If I were to wander in there and sit down at your writing desk at the dining table, would I have any clue as to what you were writing that day? Would I see post-it notes? Are there notepads sprawled around?
You'd see a messy cluster of notebooks and pads and things like that, with things scribbled on, sometimes receipts with names on and things like that. Basically, any time I get an idea, I try to scribble something down, and those things go along with me in my pockets and just, yeah, accompany me everywhere, really. But I haven't got a particular system. I've got a few notebooks. I find that actually the type of notebook I prefer is a spiral-bound one, really.
Okay. Why is that? So,
just because I can lay it flat, okay. Actually. I'm always in the hunt to try and find the best spiral-bound notebook. And
how has the hunt gone so far?
Not very well. The only trouble is I tend to tear things out of them as well. So, just notes. Mostly everything is all my notes are handwritten. And then I actually write on a laptop.
Well, this is very niche, very dull to some, but it's interesting to me. What do you write on? Is it Word? Is it Scrivener? What are you typing away at?
I've got a MacBook and I use Word. I used to use the writing, I can't remember what it's called now, Pages. I used to use that, but I used to find that editors want to see things in Word, and when I used to translate it over, I always used to have problems with italics not rendering properly and things like that. And these days I use Word on the Mac, although saying that, it's probably the one program that tends to crash on my Mac, actually. Every time I try and do a find option on it, the whole document crashes and I have to open it, so I have to be very careful with it.
These are the small issues, the small problems facing writers, the hunt for the perfect notebook and finding words without your whole laptop crashing. Well, listen, Sam, the show is Writer's Routine, so talk us through yours. You've already given us a little glimpse into the start of the day, but how does it work? The moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed on a day when you are sat down to write, what's going on?
Okay, so my average day is I get up quite early now and try and do a little bit of editing from about 6 till 7 until my boys get up and my wife gets up, and then it's chaos in the house until about 8:30 when I take them to school, and then I come back home and shut the front door, and it's silence then until the boys come home. And so that's my writing time, and that's my writing day, and I try and be as productive as I can during those hours and take the dog out at lunchtime to try and clear my head a bit. And I don't have any music on during the day. I have to have it complete silence when I'm writing. And then editing I do in the evenings, usually. And I find I can edit in lots of different places. For the actual writing, I need silence. But editing I can do anywhere. And actually, I can do that in a cafe. I can do it anywhere, in the car as well, if I'm a passenger. But writing needs to be quiet.
So you've got, I'd imagine, a stretch of about 6 hours while your boys are at school. And how do you get ready for that? Are you very good at, right, it's go time now, I've dropped the boys off, I know they're going to come home at about 3 o'clock, so now is my time to write, it's all guns go? Or do you take a little while to find the flow?
I have a kind of routine. I come in through the front door, I make myself a coffee, I'll check my emails, I'll check the news, see what's going on, drink my coffee, and then I'll open my document. I'll probably read... What I tend to do is read the last 3 or 4 pages I wrote the day before and do a light edit of those, and so that I'm that gets me back into where I was when I left off the day before. And then as I come up to the point that I just finished the day before, I then carry on through. And I always try not to finish my day's writing at the end of a chapter or at the end of a particular character's viewpoint, so that it's not a complete break. Because then sometimes that then takes a while to start again. So I like to finish in the middle of a paragraph or even in the middle of a sentence, actually, because then it's a perfect jumping on point again the next day.
I know that you, with this concentrated writing time that you are forced into, as you say, when the kids are at school, you would like to be as efficient and productive as possible. I know for writers that's not always possible. How does your energy tend to go throughout your day? Are you one of these people that finds... 25 minutes on, 5 minutes off? Are you good at 90-minute bursts? How does that flow of the day tend to work?
I think mornings are my most productive time, so I try and get as much as I possibly can done in the morning. And I would love to be more efficient. It's distractions are the worst thing, and the internet is the worst thing. It really is the worst thing. And I've tried various things, and actually, switching off the broadband at home, and that has helped. Actually, just recently I found a piece of software that I've started to use which can completely lock you out of your broadband on your laptop and also on your phone, and you just literally set the time.
Remind the name of it, because I've heard a version of this mentioned before.
Freedom, I think it's
Freedom, called. That's it, yeah.
And it completely, you can't check anything. You can't check Twitter, you can't do anything. I try to make sure that I've done any research I needed to do for particular scenes beforehand, because there have been a few times when I've locked myself out and I've suddenly realised, actually, for this scene I do need some quite vital information, and then I had to wait. But that's a small problem compared with the freedom of actually not having anything to distract me.
That's amazing, isn't it? We've got this, the internet's at our fingertips now, we're the most connected we've ever been, yet it's the freedom to not be connected. That's quite amazing.
I think for the memory wood, the internet allowed me to do so much research and get my hands on so much information that without it, it would have taken me months and months to do. And meetings face-to-face with people to try and get that information. So it's an amazing resource. But at the same time, the flip side is that it's a massive distraction. So I think it's my main concern is to use it wisely and stay clear of it during the writing time. I'm almost training myself back to have a longer attention span. I think one of the things, I can only speak for myself, but for me, the prevalence of all this social media and all this information now and distraction at your fingertips has actually made my ability to concentrate, and my concentration span feels like it's decreased over the years. And what I'm really trying to do at the moment is to wean myself off that and really concentrate on getting back to how things used to be. And I think that's vital. And so that's my goal really for this year, is to really concentrate. When I've got the time, I'm 100% concentrating on doing what I'm trying to do and trying to avoid all those distractions.
When you stop your working in the evening, when you finished up your editing, how good are you at switching off from the story?
It depends where I am in the story. And actually, if at the start of a book, then I'm very much thinking about where this is going to go. And it's usually, it's always an exciting time because, you know, there's nothing more exciting really than a blank piece of paper and an idea to put down on that piece of paper. And then towards the end of a book, especially with the memory wood, the last couple of chapters, I felt like I was living more in the book than I was in the real world. And I remember literally the last chapter, I felt quite emotional about the writing of it, and I took myself out in the car for a drive and had to fill up with petrol on the way home, and filled up the car with unleaded, which is a diesel car, ended up breaking down on the side of the road and having to get a lift back to a garage from a breakdown truck. So, yeah, I think the closer to the end I get, the more I feel like I'm in that world rather than the real world.
I guess lastly on the day, you've mentioned going out and having a walk with your dog. Have you got any other tricks that help you when you are struggling on a certain day, when the words just aren't coming? We've kind of learned on the show that writer's block really isn't a thing. Everyone's got their own little tricks of getting their way out of it. What do you do?
I think really, I forcing yourself to sit down in front of the computer and not move until you've passed that is really what I do. I mean, I remember once when I thought to myself, you know, maybe I need to get a new, completely new perspective, and I took myself off to another part of the house, and I think I might have even sat under my son's desk for 5 minutes with my laptop tucked away. And after about 5 minutes, I thought to myself, you're in your early 40s, you're sitting under your son's desk. Come on, get a grip. Go back downstairs and start writing again, which is what I did.
That's amazing, isn't it? Because in practice, in theory, what you do is so simple. You know, all you need is to sit at a desk, at your dining room table, as you say, with your laptop, with a word that hopefully isn't crashing that day. Yet the struggle to get the words coming out is always there. Well, look, the book's The Memory Wood. This is your debut thriller.
That's right, yes.
But you've written...
I've written a few other things in the past, yeah. Which had a supernatural side to them. So they were kind of thrillers, but they had a supernatural edge. And this is the first, I guess, crime thriller that I've written.
Was it a conscious decision to move into writing a crime thriller, or was it just where the idea took you?
It was purely where the idea came from. You know, I got hit with the inspiration for The Memory Wood came... And I, one of the main characters is a 12-year-old boy called Elijah, and he had been kind of knocking around in my head for a couple of years, really, without a story to put him into. And then when the idea for the Memory Wood plot came into my head, and, you know, the two felt like they came together, and I just needed to write the story at that point to find out what happened. I had a vague idea of how it would end. I wasn't 100% that it would end that way, but the pleasure of writing was to get to that destination, really, and see what the characters did. And I think always the magical thing about writing and why it's so addictive is when you're not forcing the words out, and you're not kind of trying to put characters into a particular scene, but you're taking a back seat and actually watching them. For vast amounts of writing this book, I felt like I was a witness to things happening rather than trying to pull strings.
You've answered about my next half hour's worth of questions, so so we're going to pick that apart, if that's okay. You mentioned that you had Elijah, this young boy, knocking around your head for some time. Where did the idea for him come from, and why wouldn't he go away?
I don't know. I really don't know. I just had this character in my head, and I can't, you know, where he came from, I don't know. He's just been there for a while, and it was the character of Alyssa, really, that is, and it was when the first idea for the book came together that I realised that he would need to be in it.
But what was it about him? So you say that you don't know why he was there, but... Why specifically him? Why was it not just a random young lad character that's kind of floating in your mind?
I think the reason I'm struggling to answer the question is because I can't talk about him very much and the reasons for him being in there because of what happens in the book. So if I answer that question too accurately, then then I will reveal lots of things in the book.
That's a fantastic tease if you ever needed one. Well, so let's talk about the actual the memory wood then. I mean, this is hard, as you've mentioned. You don't want to say too much because you don't want to give the plot away, but we have to do some selling.
Sure.
So you've got Elijah knocking around your brain, and then Alyssa comes up too. Talk to me about the very first moment that the actual idea for the plot came into your head. What was the moment of revelation?
Okay, so to do that, I'll have to skip back to when my son was first born. And my wife, I think, during the first months of his life, was very, very anxious about his welfare. Always was thinking about, what might happen to him. And I think the way she used to deal with it is she used to war game out all these potential scenarios and how she would rescue him from them. And for the first couple of weeks, they tended to be an everyday types of scenario, like choking and things like that. But over the course of weeks, they started to get a bit darker. And I'd be watching TV next to her, and I'd look at her, and she'd be staring off into the middle distance, and I'd say, "What are you thinking about?" And she'd say, I'm just imagining what would happen and what we would do if people burst through the front door now with guns, and how I would protect Noah, who's our son. And progressively, these got darker and darker. And we actually used to make a light of it. After about 2 months, it completely disappeared and it never came back. But then fast forward about 8 years, and he was starting to play a lot of chess at school. And he got into the regional finals of this national chess tournament. And so I took him along to the day, and it was at a secondary school down in Surrey. And when we arrived, we didn't know what to expect, but there were hundreds of parents and hundreds of kids around at this school on a Saturday. And it was pretty, pretty chaotic and no security, not that you'd expect there would have to be any security. And the first thing we did, we had to go and find his first match. And there were all these chess boards on all these trestle tables with numbers. And we found his opponent and who was waiting there. The parents met. And then when the game started, all the parents filed out. And because it was a nice day, some of us waited on the cricket pitch, and some people went in and got coffees and things like that into the local town. And I would usually take a book with me to that kind of thing, but on that particular day I didn't. And so I was just there for the whole day with nothing really to entertain myself. And maybe because of that little seed my wife had planted all those years ago, I started thinking and looking around and thinking how easy it would be actually for a determined stranger to snatch someone from this tournament if that's what they wanted. And I started thinking about it more and more. And I think by the end of the day, I had really my premise, and I started writing very quickly after that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promote for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We've got more with Sam Lloyd in just a bit, and we'll get into some brand new book releases in a sec. First, I want to do a quick push towards our Patreon page. If you love the show, if you've heard any tips in almost 100 episodes that we've given you that have helped the way that you tell your stories, please do pledge to us and help us out over on our Patreon. It doesn't cost a lot, just a dollar or so a month. It keeps us bringing these shows out to you as often as we can. It helps me buy new equipment, so that the audio is the best that it can be. When we're finally all allowed properly outside again, it'll help me buy a coffee for authors that I meet face to face. It helps me get to where they are. It just helps the show keep ticking over. Now, I know that it's a tough time at the moment, so anything at all that you can spare is immensely gratefully received. Seriously, anything that you can send our way to help us out is amazing. You can do it over at patreon.com/writersroutine. And now remember, if your book release has been like absolutely ruined by this lockdown, if you had such plans about the story that you've slaved over for years on end, if you had so many dreams and they've been like slightly squashed because no one can actually go out to your signings and whatever, well, let me know. I can do what I can. I can give you a virtual book launch with the writing community that we've got going on this show. I can give you a plug here. Just send it my way over on the contact form at writersroutine.com. Trevor Wood has just published his debut crime novel. It's called The Man on the Street. It's all about Jimmy, who's a homeless veteran with PTSD, who sees a murder, thinks he sees a murder, and no one believes him. Now, if you love your Jack Reacher, how about this? The book has been hugely praised by Lee Child. He called it an instant classic. Now, Trevor spent ages writing the book. He's quite a late bloomer in terms of being published, and his launch event was cancelled just hours before it was meant to happen. All his signings, all his panels have gone too. So go and have a look at it online. That's the least you can do. It's called The Man on the Street, and it's by Trevor Wood. Also, I really don't want to overload this and saturate it with stories and make the books that I do shout out get lost in the noise. So this will be the last one for this week. It's a psychological thriller, a timely psychological thriller. It's by Nikki Smith. It's called All in Her Head. It's all about Alison, who believes she is being stalked by her ex-husband Jack, but then the mention of one name turns her world upside down. It's been praised by Leslie Cara and Harriet Tice, one of our favourites on the show. It's been published by Orion. It is out right now, so go and have a look at it. Support the writing community. It's called All in Her Head. It's by Nikki Smith. So yeah, that one by Nikki, you've got The Man on the Street by Trevor Wood as well. Those are what you need to go and look at this week. And remember, if your book launch has been slightly rained on, let me help you out. I'll give you a plug in the next few weeks. You can tell me all about it on our contact page at writersroutine.com. Right, let's get back to it then with Sam Lloyd, the author of his debut thriller, The Memory Wood. In this half, we chat about how much he wants to force the twists and why the characters that he's written actually often stop him from doing that. Also, why the idea pulled him in and why Alyssa and Elijah kept him writing till the end. And we pick things up with what he actually knew he didn't want the story to be when he started.
This would obviously kind of be an abduction story. And what I didn't want it to be was just the character of Alyssa is a 13-year-old girl. She's fantastic at chess. She's really bright. And I didn't want it to just be a story about a female victim who, you know, spends the entire book being rescued. And what interested me about it was this idea of power, really. So Alyssa, at the start of the book, she loses all her power. She's snatched from this tournament that she's playing at, and it's a world ranking tournament where if she wins, she'll go on to the national team. And she's doing really well, and then she's snatched from this tournament, dragged into a van and sedated. And when she wakes up hours later, she's freezing cold, she's in complete darkness, and she's tethered to this metal post by chain. And so she's lost all her power. But actually, when her abductor arrives and she starts to understand what's happening around her, she does realise that she is by far the most intelligent of the people that she meets. And once she starts to understand that, she realises that she does have a small amount of power, her intellectual power. And that's the point that she starts using it to deceive and to manipulate those that she meets in this place beneath the memory wood.
We're spending a lot of our time with Alyssa locked to her. How are you making her believable, relatable, I guess, understandable through your words?
So Alyssa is, she finds herself in a hideous situation, and I think I wanted to make, you know, she it would be very easy to be completely overwhelmed in that situation and completely give up. What Alyssa does is reduce everything to the abstraction of a chess game, and for a while that's her survival mechanism. She, for instance, she's in darkness, so she imagines the confines of her cell, which are dictated by the length of the chain, as a chessboard, and she gives each particular space in that chessboard a number, and then she goes and searches her cell. And then later on, she decides that she may find clues in what happened to her and the reason she's here in everything that led up to the chess tournament. So she uses the chessboard as well as a kind of memory map, and she tries to interrogate all of her individual memories on the lead up to this event and try to compartmentalise them so that she doesn't forget them, and so that every single thing she has, she finds, has a value, and she's determined not to squander it.
When you're writing a story like this that is a thriller, that, as you say, is an abduction story, but yet there's more at play. You were speaking about power. When do you start, as a writer, when do you start to get an idea of the themes of the book, and how do you interweave those into the plot to make it something that is unusual?
I think I've never wanted to. I think if a book kind of wears its theme too obviously, it starts to become preachy. And I've always, you know, I always wanted to make sure that at the end of the day, this is a story. I'm telling a story here. But theme, to have an idea of theme loosely in the back of your mind can sometimes be helpful when you get to a point and you think, okay, so where am I going at this point? And having those just loose, I like to have maybe one word or two words, which to me will help keep me on track. And it might not be the same word throughout. It might be a word for, you know, for this book, for example, I was thinking about power a lot during the initial stages of the book. And the other thing I was thinking about is loss as well. And, you know, Elijah has a lot of loss in his life. The detective who is investigating Alyssa's disappearance, loss is a big part of her backstory. And Alyssa, although she's focusing completely on trying to survive this hideous episode, but everybody has their limits, and you know she will get progressively closer to her limit, and at some point just surviving for her own sake won't be enough to help her, and she tries to, thinking about loss, she focuses very much on her mother, and her mother is, she comes from her mum's a single mum, and has done everything for Alyssa during her life to help her try and make the best of things. And Alyssa knows that actually if the person who's taking her, you know, wins out in this situation, it's not going to be just Alyssa's life that is ruined and ended, but it's her mum's as well. And she's determined that doesn't happen. So it's not just about keeping herself alive for her own sake, but it's about making sure her mum's life isn't destroyed.
You mentioned Alyssa. She thinks this, she thought that, she wanted to do this, she wanted to do that. She's a separate entity, clearly, in your mind. Is that consciously? Are you consciously making these decisions for Alyssa? This is how much she cares about her mum. Or, as soon as you start writing about her, does she go off and do her own thing?
Alyssa was really fascinating, and that's the thing that I really enjoyed about writing this, because at the point that I started writing, Elijah, as I said, had been knocking around in my head for years, so I felt like I knew him. Alyssa, at the point I started writing, because when the book opens, we're with Elijah, and actually the book opens on day six, so a lot of stuff has happened already, and Alyssa comes in the second chapter, and at the point I started writing her, I mean, I loved the idea of plotting something out in advance. I don't tend to do that. And when I got to Alyssa's first chapter, I hadn't thought about her too much, other than it was she just formed on the page. It was really interesting how it happened, and her personality, her mum, the backstory, everything just seemed to just come together. And I don't know where it comes from, but I love it when that happens. Because this person just seems to come to life. The thing that fascinated me most about the book was about the idea was this interplay between Alyssa and Elijah. So Alyssa wakes up underground, and the first person she meets is her abductor. And when they have their initial conversation, she realises that he has no intention of ever letting her go. So her situation looks absolutely bleak. And then the stroke of luck in the book is when Elijah, who is a very lonely, solitary 12-year-old, is playing in his local woods, and he discovers her underground cell. So she thinks, brilliant, I'm saved, urges him to go and get help. And however, he thinks he's just found his first true friend, and he knows that if he does do as she asks and go and gets the police, then he'll lose her. So that part of the book is the thing that excited me most, really. This idea that on the surface they're friends, but they're both playing this game of deception against each other, because she realises quite quickly that her only chance of survival is to keep Elijah on side and make a friend of him, but then deceive him into helping her, because clearly he's not going to do that without being pushed. And I think because I knew some of the things that were going to be coming up, I had to tell Elijah's story, start to introduce him first, and it made sense to do that at a high interest point in the book, which is why it happens on day six.
Without giving too much away, that left turn that you just mentioned, Elijah doesn't want Alyssa to be free because he wants a friend. How does that follow on in your mind from when you're sat there while your son's at a chess tournament thinking about what would happen if a child was taken? Where does that left turn? Because it could just be a fairly run-of-the-mill abduction story, as you mentioned, but that curveball, where does that come from in your imagination?
Well, I think that was the smashing together of the two ideas. That was the idea of an abduction from a chess tournament was the idea that came to me on the day that I was at the chess tournament. And at some point during the day, I thought, hang on, this is the story to put Elijah into, that guy that you've been thinking about. And because I knew his character, it made sense in my head what would happen when the two of them met and how that would work. It was just that. I mean, that's how it happened, I guess. It was just the fact that Elijah, I knew he would find this girl, and he would almost think of her as his saviour, because he's such a lonely individual, and she would initially think of him as her saviour, because he has the power to go and get help if he chooses. And the interesting thing was how they would both be almost working together and pulling apart at the same time.
It's amazing watching a writer desperately try and not give too many spoilers away whilst revealing the plot some of the way. Listen, you were talking about plotting earlier, that you don't really plot that much. Quite a pantser. How much do you know about the story before you do sit down to write?
I like to have an opening scene, and I suppose I think about things quite visually. And when I feel like I've seen that scene and, you know, or the first couple of scenes of the book very clearly in my mind, then and I know if I've got, you know, at least a possible destination, not necessarily where the book will finish, but this is a possible way it could end, What I'd love to happen then is to think about all the things that happen in between and start plotting those out. But actually what I tend to find is that as soon as I've got that scene really visualised in my head and I've got a possible ending, I just get really impatient and want to start because I'm worried that actually the idea will go stale in my head if I don't start and, you know, I'll wait too long. And it's like kind of having a car revving with its engine going. I just want to get on at some point and start doing it.
Well, keeping on the theme of the car with that metaphor, when you are driving along the journey of this story, when do things become clear to you through the windscreen? When do you know what's happening next?
I'm comfortable if I've got a few days of writing ahead of me where I know roughly where things are going. And what I tend to do is, you know, I'm writing during the day, but I think my subconscious is at the same time as I'm writing is starting things further down the line, is starting to become more clear. And as long as I've got that kind of buffer of a couple of days in advance, then I'm generally happy. The times that I start getting a little bit nervous are when that buffer is starting to reduce, and you know, if it gets to zero and literally I'm writing and I don't know exactly what's happening, that's the point that I start thinking, well, I'm nervous now. And maybe sometimes what I'll do when that does happen is just switch into an editing mode and go back, you know, a few chapters for a day or two and just keep, you know, just read back what I've written. And usually that's enough again to kickstart my subconscious, really, to give me that thought of what's going to happen again, and I go back and carry on. There's been times when I've thought to myself, do you know what, this would be a great twist, or this would be a brilliant thing to happen next. And then I've thought, but it doesn't ring true with these characters. And so there were lots of things that I've thrown out in my writing because it hasn't felt authentic. And so, yeah, always character comes first for me. I've always said, you know, when I'm reading, everyone likes a good twist in a book, actually, but I'll take great characters over a twist any day of the week because those are what stick with me anyway. You know, there's, you know, characters I've met. And so, yeah, I tend to focus on character first and plot second, but obviously plot's important.
And the last question about the plot, when you said you went into this with a vague idea about the ending, when did it become absolutely clear to you this is how the story is going to finish, this is the end of Alyssa's tale?
About halfway through, things started to solidify. But there was still lots of room for various things to happen, and I think probably only as I was approaching that final chapter did I really make final decisions about, you know, exactly what would happen in the end. And, you know, without giving anything away, the last few chapters were actually quite harrowing to write because, you know, the course of about 6 months or so of writing the first draft, I came incredibly close to lots of the characters that I was writing about. And so it sometimes becomes hard to put them into difficult and fraught situations, but that's something you've got to do, really.
Aside from how harrowing it is, when you understand how this is going to end, does it then make your job easier as a writer because there is a fixed point in mind? Does it make you telling the bits in the middle, does it make that simpler?
Yes, I think it does. It's actually an emotional experience, I find, coming to the end of a book, and I guess that's how it should be, because if you want people to feel emotion for the characters that you've created, then if you're not feeling emotion for them yourselves, how can you expect anyone else to? And actually, you know, these two people felt real to me at the end, and actually all the way through. And so I want them to feel real to other people as well. And so it feels only right that I'm having an emotional reaction as I'm writing.
You say that you do quite a lot of editing every day. You know, you'll set aside time in the morning and the evening to do light edits. How perfect does each word that you write need to be for you? Is it that, do you hope that is the final word, or is it just a case of getting them down?
In the first, as I'm writing, it's about getting the story down as quickly really as I possibly can. And And then the edits that I'm doing as I'm going along are light touch edits, and they are word edits, but which is what I tend to do for the first half an hour in the morning, and I'll do a little bit in the evenings as well. But once I've finished, then I'll go through a much more rigorous edit, and I'll do that several times, and with other books as well. I've probably done so many edits by the time that any editor has seen it that I, you know, there's been times when I've read, when I get to the point that I've read the book all the way through from beginning to end and I've changed three words, and then on the next read through I'll change one of those words back to the original word it was. I feel like this is done now. This is done. But then of course it goes to the edit stage and it's not done, but it's done as far as I'm happy for someone to see it at that point.
Your writing routine is one of both force, and thought of analysis. What would you like to tweak about it with the next few books that you write? What do you think you could still change to make how you write your stories each day better?
Well, I would love a space of my own to write. That would be fantastic, you know? I mean, I would love to not be mopping up milk every morning and pushing piles of paperwork away from the table to try and find myself a little space. But, you know, maybe that's a good thing anyway, really, to have, you know, that slight distraction. But really, as I was kind of saying earlier, the thing I'm really trying to focus on is to improve my ability to not get distracted and to really use every single minute I've got available to really focus on writing and actually blot everything out.
And that is it for this week's Writer's Routine. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. A few things to just pick up on. Remember, you can get 20% off Scrivener, the most fantastic writing software that we've found. Just use the code Routine, R-O-U-T-I-N-E. Use it to get 20% off Scrivener 3 when you check out over at literatureandlatte.com. You can also try it out on there as well. I think they give you a free trial just so you can get your head around some of the immense features and brilliant writing tools that can help you tell your stories. So there's that. You can also support us on the Patreon, patreon.com/writersroutine. Anything that you give on there is immensely gratefully received, especially at this time. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you've not done that. Follow us on Twitter. There's a huge list, isn't there? Follow us on Twitter. It's Writers Pod. And remember those two books that I told you about earlier. Their book releases were slightly dampened. You had The Man on the Street by Trevor Wood. And you also had All in Her Head by Nikki Smith. Go and look those up. Help the writing community here on the show. And I'll be back next week with more. We've got a psychological thriller on the show, Nell Patterson. She'll talk us through her debut. That's next week on Writer's Routine. I will see you then. Bye.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.